Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
I wasn't sure exactly what to do next. I didn't want to risk the men in white seeing the meditation man. I figured that if anyone of the staff knew he was there, they would have done something to prevent him from showing up. Also, it was hard to think of attempting to escape with one of the men in white always breathing down my neck. They literally were watching me sleep in shifts so that I couldn't do anything shady. That didn't prevent me from meditating on my own, though. Most of my free time was spent meditating or exercising. The sensory deprivation tank was still horribly painful, but it began to get at least partially manageable, and the meditation considerably helped to prevent my memories from changing, though many of my memories are forever tainted. In the back of my mind, I knew they were thinking of getting rid of me. I had to make a move soon, and the only move I could think of was entering room 117. Now, I know the rules explicitly stated to never enter room 117, but the rules weren't foolproof. One of the patients wrote them. I would have tried to make contact with the guy that dropped them, but after his incident, I never saw him again. I made a plan to go into room 117 during free time. Though there were always men in white watching me, I figured I could just make a run for it really quickly while the man in white had his back turned or something. Yeah, I know it wasn't much of a plan, but there wasn't much else I could do. That day, as I was mentally amping myself up to go, I walked up to my room and there was a note on my door. Anthony, meet me in my office at 4 p.m. It is number 203. I look forward to meeting you. Dr. Jacobs was signed at the bottom. It was written in impeccable handwriting. It almost looked as though it was typed. Now, I would have certainly skipped this meeting, but since there was a man in white following me, I didn't have much of a choice.
Dr. Jacobs wants to see you. You're very lucky, you know.
The man in white had a huge smile. What happens if I skip it? I decided to just be blunt with him.
You won't be missing your meeting on my watch.
I decided to meditate before my meeting with Dr. Jacobs. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew I would have a better chance if I were in there with a clear mind. I sat cross-legged in my bed and started to focus on my breath. At first, it was difficult to stay focused with a man in white watching me. But at this point, I had gotten pretty accustomed to it. Slowly, I started to reach a point of stillness. I found myself sitting in a completely black room. I looked around for a bit, until I heard someone familiar calling my name.
Anthony.
I turned around and saw the meditation man, sitting in that same cross-legged position, with his beaming, genuine smile.
What's going on? Where am I? Is this real, or am I just imagining this?
Just because you're imagining this does not mean I'm not really here.
He laughed. I thought for a second.
What should I do? There's a man in white following me constantly. I can't escape like this.
When I ring the singing bowl, you will know what to do. But for now, sit with me, my friend. This is the last time we will see each other.
Thank you, I said.
Then I closed my eyes and meditated with the man one last time. I opened my eyes and saw the man in white grinning at me.
Time to go. Follow me.
I got off my bed, stood up, and noticed that there was something tucked in my waistband. As the man in white turned around, I felt the sharp end of a razor blade prick my finger. I followed the man in white through the halls and to Dr. Jacob's office.
"Here we are,"
the man in white exclaimed. I stood there for a second in front of the door, and then reluctantly went inside. In the office was a chair with arm and leg restraints, and a long table with three bags sitting on it. In the corner was another door. The room was dark and still. Hello? Dr. Jacobs?
Yes, just give me a moment. Have a seat if you'd like.
His voice was coming from the door in the corner. There was no way I was going to sit in that chair, so I just stood in place. A couple of minutes passed, and I was staring off into space. Suddenly, the door violently swung open. A creature with pale white skin came barging in. I screamed, and the creature dashed towards me with inhuman speed, and then somehow, I blacked out. I woke up with my arms and legs restrained in the chair, and my head was violently aching. The creature was fiddling with things in the bag.
"What the hell is going on?"
I screamed.
"Yes. Hello, Anthony. I am Dr. Jacobs,"
the creature responded.
"What are you going to do to me?"
I asked. The creature laughed.
"Oh, I'm going to cut you open, and then I'm going to feed you to the old gods."
I felt my heart racing. Is this how I was going to die, after making it so far? No. Screw that. I had to distract this thing. Since my waist wasn't restrained, I was able to slightly lift my hips and grab the razor with my right hand while the creature was messing around with the bags on the table. Soon, after I got a hold of it, the creature turned around to face me. It was holding a serrated blade. "Your pain is very important to me, and to the old gods." I could see the creature fully now. It had long, thick strands of greasy black hair, and an abnormally large face and head. Its arms, legs, and torso were long and skinny, and it had small, completely white, beady oval eyes. The most notable feature was its huge mouth, which extended its face wider, and had a full set of jagged yellow teeth. The way it moved was almost playful, or dance-like.
"Before I begin, I would like to answer some questions you might have about our little program."
I had to stall him.
"Who are the men in white?"
I asked.
"Ah, our staff members. They were like you once. Lost souls looking for redemption. After you complete the butterfly phase, we decide whether to offer you to the old gods, or if you would be better suited as one of the men in white."
His voice was raspy and guttural, almost like it strained him to speak to me. I started cutting my right hand's restraints with the razor blade, but I didn't have a great angle at it, so it was taking some time. I had to keep stalling.
"What about the people who run the groups? Who are they?"
"They are my brothers. They are like me, but are wearing human skin."
He stood in front of me. He was at least 6.5 feet tall, from what I could tell, and his teeth were littered with what looked like old pieces of flesh. His breath stank like wet garbage. I balled my fists to hide the razor in my hand, and I prayed that he didn't see that the restraint was partially cut.
"Now, would you like me to start with your fingers or your toes?"
My heart was racing.
"Toes!"
I exclaimed quickly.
"Ah, good choice."
He bent down and began sawing my pinky toe off. The pain was excruciating.
Each time he went back and forth, he counted.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Oh, 13 cuts for the pinky toe.
My breath grew hoarse from screaming. He left for a moment to grab something from the bag, and then bent over by my feet again. I felt a searing hot pain as he cauterized the stump where my pinky toe had been. I started crying. I couldn't even help it. The pain was too much. He turned around again, and I was frantically working on getting my right hand's restraint off. It was about 3/4 of the way through when he faced me again. He held the serrated blade in front of me and licked the blood off. Then he began working on my next toe.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, looks like we finished that one quicker.
He laughed. Do my finger. Please, do my fingers. I cried.
Oh, you want your fingers done now, do you? Well, I can't have you dying of blood loss just yet.
He cauterized my other wound. I didn't think I would experience pain worse than the deprivation tanks. But this was pure torture. He went back to the table to retrieve a different blade just as I finished the restraint. I put the leather strap back over my wrist so it looked like I was still bound to the chair. He came over to me and grabbed my pinky finger. I whispered to him.
What was that?
He responded as he bent down lower to hear me. I then jammed the razor with all of my force into his neck and pulled it across as hard as I could. Black liquid spurted out across my face as Dr. Jacobs fell to the ground. He didn't even make a sound as he died. He just stared at me with complete disbelief in his eyes. I managed to hold on to the razor after I slit his throat, so I frantically started working on my other wrist's restraint. This was much faster to cut since I had a good angle on it. After I finished, my hand was cut up pretty good, but it was nothing compared to how my feet felt. I removed my left arm's restraint, then my feet. I hobbled over to Dr. Jacob's body. I picked up his serrated blade and stabbed him repeatedly through his face and body. Then I put it in my waistband. I tried to clean the black liquid off of me the best I could with a towel that was sitting on the table. It presumably was there to clean up my own blood. My heart was still racing, and I was frantically trying to think of a plan to exit the room without suspicion. Eventually, I just decided to walk out casually and hope that no one checked in on Dr. Jacobs for a while. I gently opened the door and went into the hall. Luckily, it was all clear, so I made my way down to room 117. As I was briskly limping along, one of the men in white saw me.
You're not supposed to be alone.
He eyed me with an unsure look on his face.
Yes, I just had my meeting with Dr. Jacobs. I was looking for one of you.
I tried to act normal, like I didn't just stab some monster to death with a razor blade that was given to me in a hallucination.
Okay. It seems Dr. Jacob has had his fun with you. I'll escort you now.
He smiled at me knowingly.
Of course. I completely see now how beneficial the program is, and I'll do everything I can to not disrupt it further.
I wasn't sure if he bought it, but I was desperate to make it to room 117. I walked down the hallway and to the room. I went to open the door, but the man in white stopped me.
Where do you think you're going? You're not allowed.
Before he could finish, I heard,
"He killed Dr. Jacobs! Get him!"
Men in white came sprinting towards me, and the one next to me grabbed my throat and pressed me up against the door. I reached behind my back to grab the blade, and I stabbed him in the shoulder as hard as I could.
It pierced deep into his arm, and I let go of the blade. He released my neck, and I widely opened the door and fell inside. I locked it and was getting ready to brace myself against it, until everything got quiet. No one was breaking into the room after me for some reason. I was sure they must have had a key to the room. I stayed there for about a minute or two, just to make sure no one was trying to get in. Then, I turned around. I was met by the sights of 30 or so faces staring at me. I jumped back, startled. My eyes gradually started adjusting to the dark a bit, and I could see that there were no bodies. It was as though someone just sliced off people's faces and hung them all up around the room at various heights. There was also a large dinner table in the middle of the room, with a man sitting on a chair, facing away from me. The man was completely still, and didn't even react to me barging in. I stood there for a minute, unsure of what to do. Hello? I asked. No response. I wondered who the hell this guy was, and why no one went chasing after me. I didn't exactly want to walk back out of the room, considering what was waiting for me on the other side, so I decided to slowly walk towards the chair. The faces were staring at me, and the man gave off an incredibly sinister aura. I started noticeably shaking the closer I got to him. I made my way to the other side of the table, and I noticed that the man didn't have any facial features. It was just blank. No nose, no mouth, no eyes, and no ears. He was wearing a suit and tie, and had a large black cowboy hat on. At this point, I broke. I screamed at him.
What the hell do you want from me? I'll kill you. You hear me?
I collapsed onto the ground, crying. I was stuck in here. I decided to look around to see if there were any clues. I was able to turn on some lights. The faces lit up. I was right. They were clearly people's faces that were carved off at some point in time. None of them were decaying, though. Somehow this room kept them fresh. The light was only able to brighten the room to a sickening yellow hue. I searched in on one of the cabinets and was only able to find a variety of different knives and blades. I took a medium-sized folding knife and put it in my pocket. I then went into the bathroom. First, I was greeted by the sight of a body in the tub. His face was flayed off and was sitting neatly next to the sink. I initially thought he was dead, until blood spurted out of his mouth.
Kill me. Kill me. Kill me.
He kept repeating. I decided I had to put him out of his misery. I grabbed the knife out of my pocket, flipped it open, and stabbed him in the throat. He choked for a second, and then went silent. I kept searching and searching the room, hoping to find anything that would assist me with my next move. The only other thing I found was a vial of green liquid beneath the sink. After about an hour of looking, I slunk defeated into the chair at the opposite side of the dinner table. Suddenly, the man came to life.
Hello there,
he uttered. I was startled.
Who are you?
I asked.
I am just a visitor,
he said.
Well, can you help me get out of here?
I thought back to the rules. They stated to not trust the man with no face. I could see why, with all the cut-up faces dangling above me.
I could help you, or I could add to my collection. Which one it will be up to you.
He talked in a very serious tone. I pondered for a moment in my chair. I didn't really have much of a choice but to trust him. I asked him what I had to do.
Well, as you can already tell, I like to collect things that I have without a face. Usually, I tempt you humans with a chance at freedom, and then I lure them into a trap. You humans really are very easy to trick. Their screams pleasure me as I carve their faces off. But you already know my little game, so I would like to offer up another one. You win, and I will help you escape. If I win, I will be taking that face of yours.
My hand clenched the knife I had.
That thing won't do any good. Go ahead, try and stab me if you want. It won't end well for you.
I thought a bit about his offer. Would he try to trick me again? I decided to just play his little game. Okay, I'm in, I stated.
Good, good. Well then, let's begin.
He pulled out a deck of all black playing cards and started shuffling them. A couple minutes went, and then he splayed the cards out in a row.
If you pick the correct card, you win. If you pick the incorrect card, then I win, and I will take that beautiful face of yours.
I had no idea what to do. All the cards were black. How would I know which one was correct? I thought maybe the room number had something to do with it. 117. But there clearly weren't 117 cards in the deck. Maybe 1 + 1 + 7. That'd be 9. But I didn't even know which direction I would start counting from. I sat there, contemplating what to do. I could try and stab him with the knife, but he said that wouldn't have been a good idea, and for some reason, I believed him. Well, will you just give me some kind of hint? I asked. He shook his head. I started to grow aggravated. I didn't have any clue which card to pick. Then, it hit me. I began desperately counting all the faces that were strung up. I got to 27. 2 + 7 = 9. Now I just had to figure out which side to start counting from. I wasn't 1000% sure I was correct, but the man seemed very prideful about his collection, so it seemed logical. Then I thought of another idea. I brought the knife I was holding up and hurled it at him. He immediately brought his left hand up and caught it before it collided with his blank face. He had no reaction. He just slowly brought his hands down, still clutching the knife. Okay, I thought. I'm going to count 9 cards down from my right. I picked up the card and was about to tell him my decision was made when I remembered. The face in the bathroom. That makes 10. I put the card down and chose the next card from my right. This is my card. He quickly lunged across the table and held the knife to my throat.
You choose correctly.
He loosened his grip and took the card from my hand and placed it back into the deck and then walked into the bathroom. He came back and was holding the vial of green liquid I had seen earlier.
First, you must drink this.
I hesitated. Could I really actually trust this guy? It was my only hope. I chugged it down. It tasted like nothing. I sure didn't feel any different.
The liquid will show you your spirit. You must follow it to find freedom.
Then, the faceless man ripped a huge hole straight out of thin air with his hands. Through the hole, I could see the woods that were right off of the trail that went around Harmony Hills.
Go through. Your spirits will guide you.
Wait. Before I go, I need to get Alex, I yelled.
I can open the door whenever you request it, but only one time.
If I remembered Alex's room correctly, it was number 105. And if I was right, Alex would be in his room during free time. I grabbed another folding knife from the faceless man's cabinet and readied myself. Open it to room 105, I asked.
As you wish,
he declared. I hopped through the portal and arrived in front of Alex's room. I barged in, probably looking like a madman. And just as suspected, Alex was lying down on his bed. Alex, we have to go now. I know a way out, but we have to leave right now.
But why would I ever want to leave?
He said, in a dazed state. I was afraid this would happen. I yanked him out of bed by his arm. He at least went semi-willingly. I opened the door a crack to see one man in white rounding the corner away from the patient's rooms. I guided Alex out and through the hall. I made it to the door that led outside when someone spotted me.
He's there. Get him.
A man in white screamed. I madly dragged Alex outside while the men started dashing after me. I made it to the trail as one of the men in white was gaining on me. I whipped my knife out of my pocket. I flipped it open and let go of Alex's arm. The man tackled me by my legs, and I plunged the knife into his neck. Blood poured over my face. He didn't make a sound as he died. A couple more of the men in white were getting closer. I pulled Alex's arm, and we got to the trail. I wasn't sure exactly where to run off to. I knew there were creatures in the woods that killed all of the patients who entered. Just as my hopes started to dwindle, and as the men got close, I saw something glowing about 15 feet ahead of me. It was a snake, but it was shimmering with a green glowing aura. I knew I had to follow it. I ran off the trail and towards the snake, still dragging Alex behind me. I had to stop for a second because my foot was killing me. I saw that all the men in white were standing right at the border of the trail. Me and Alex were about 20 feet into the woods.
We'll find you,
one of the men in white yelled to me. I turned back and followed the snake. It was going relatively fast, so it was tough to keep up with it, as I was also dragging Alex, and my foot hurt a great deal. Then, the snake stopped. I quickly took cover behind a tree with Alex. I could hear leaves and sticks cracking. I peeked around the tree and saw a strange creature. Its appearance looked like a child scribbling the outline of a human with a pencil. It was making odd clicking sounds as it bounded through the forest. It went on like this for hours. It would follow the snake as it made zigzags through the forest, and when the snake stopped, I would hide as best I could behind trees or boulders. Alex was slowing me down, but I knew that once he got some care, he would be back to normal, so I couldn't leave him. I kept following the snake until we reached a river. I pushed Alex to go through, but he just became limp and fell to the ground.
Alex, dude, please get up. We have to go. Harmony Hills will make me a better mom. You'll see.
He slurred out. Then I heard the clicking get closer. I didn't have time to grab Alex, so I bolted behind another tree.
Christ, I thought. They're going to see him.
I heard the branches snap right where Alex was, and then silence. Clicking continued. I heard clicking from multiple directions. Then, five of them showed up. They started tearing Alex apart. He screamed. And then, silence. I sprinted across the tree while they were distracted with Alex, and managed to find the snake again. This was all my fault. My friends died because of me. I started panicking, and then caught myself. I didn't have time for self-loathing. Hours of limping through those woods went by. It became dark. The only light I had was from the glow of the snake. There were no stars, and there was no moon. Eventually, we made it to a trail, and the snake disappeared. I started looking for it for a bit, until I heard that clicking sound again. I sprinted down the trail. The pain in my foot was immense, but I kept going and going, until I somehow fainted. I woke up in a hospital, with IVs in my arm, and my foot wrapped in bandages.
Oh, he's awake. Hello, my name is Claire, and I'm your nurse this morning. It seems you got yourself a nasty concussion,
she exclaimed.
Where am I? You're at a hospital, right outside of Redacted. You've been out for 2 days now. What is the last thing you remember?
I didn't know what to tell them. I fell off my bike. I could tell she didn't buy it. Obviously, that didn't explain what happened to my toes and why two were missing. But I didn't care.
Well, I'm sorry to inform you that your bike was not located. We found you on a popular hiking trail with no belongings on you. A hiker actually came across you on the side of the trail, unresponsive, and he called 911. He may have saved your life. You had a nasty concussion, and your foot was bleeding profusely, she said.
I was sort of in a state of shock. I wasn't sure if this was some sick game, and I was still at Harmony Hills. But I did notice that I was starving.
Could I please get some food?
Sure, no problem. How about a sandwich?
That sounds good. Thank you.
She left the room, and my thoughts were racing. I didn't know whether to tell the people at the hospital about Harmony Hills or not. After a couple of minutes, Claire came back.
Here's your sandwich. And it looks like you've gotten a letter.
Okay. Thank you.
She placed the food tray and letter on a table that folded up over the hospital bed. I looked at the letter. No return address. I opened it and unfolded the paper. "We will find you," was written in big, bold letters. I immediately ripped out my IVs and snuck out of the hospital. I have been on the run ever since. I never stay in a town or city for too long, and I use burner phones as well as sleeping in random motels with a fake name, and I keep myself afloat by doing odd jobs. I also cut contact with my friends and my parents. I'm sure that they think I am dead. The one good thing that came from my experience is my newfound love for meditation. I do it every day, and I have been clean from drugs ever since I escaped. Now, I don't have all the answers as to what went on in Harmony Hills, but I know enough of its depravity. At first, I had only been trying to survive. But recently, I've been only interested in one thing. Taking down that godforsaken place called Harmony Hills.